Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In celebration of opening day, we've got a special episode of the Moth Podcast for you. The theme is baseball and the surprising ways it connects people.
I gaze out at the players on the field, and then I look over at my dad, and I realize that in the silence between us that something has changed. It's like I'm seeing him for the first time.
Two stories about baseball, family, and so much more. The episode's available right now. Subscribe to the Moth Podcast to make sure you hear it.
Yeah, there should be some passion. This doesn't have to be boring.
You guys get bored by baseball. Okay, one thing the game needs is more people like you.
Still have grown men run around tight pants.
Mookie Betts.
Daniel Bard.
Steve Aoki.
Jared Saltalamacchia.
This is Brock Holt.
Hey, this is John Lester.
Baseball
isn't boring.
Welcome to Baseball Isn't Boring. Here's your host, Rob Radford.
All right, let's go. All right, baseball is not boring. You know how I know that? Because we've been talking about it 3 months now. 3 months on this podcast. I want to thank everybody for rating, reviewing, listening, the whole ball of wax, buying the merchandise, buying the book on Amazon, coming out February 28th, A Damn Near Perfect Game, Reclaiming America's Pastime with myself, Rob Radford, and Joe Kelly. So I just want to thank everybody. We continue the conversation, and we're going to keep on doing it. And we got big, big news coming. Big news. And we're going to get to that in the coming weeks. But we're just to say we're going to have a lot of momentum heading into the season. We're going to have a lot of momentum heading into spring training. It's right around the corner. And, you know, you have a lot of these teams now. They're getting a taste of it. They're giving fans a little taste. Little taste with these winter weekends. And I stopped by the Red Sox one this weekend. It was so good to see people in person come up and say, hey, listen, you know, I start my day. I subscribe to the podcast. And at 6 a.m. or whenever you wake up, boom, there it is. It's the way that I start the day. It's this for people who like baseball, for people who want to talk about baseball, who people want to start their day that way, or maybe some point in the day, know that it's sitting there ready to roll. That's the way that they're going to do it. And that's the way they have been doing it. Like I said, it's been very, very nice just hearing this straight from people, because that was our goal and that will continue to be our goal. Well, like we, there's a lot to get to this week, because as we get closer to spring training, we sort of shift from the offseason stuff to actually guys throwing and catching and hitting a baseball. And one of the things that's sort of fascinating, obviously the WBC is fascinating, right? We already had Sean Spradling on, and he was great talking, breaking down all the rosters. We'll continue to do that. There's been plenty of WBC talk. But one thing that people should understand is that the WBC is going to impact the rules. They're going to impact how players play this game. And how's that? Well, you have all these new rules, pitch clock, holding guys or throwing guys over guys, bigger bases, no shifts, all of that. And I don't know if you know that. That's not happening in the WBC. So basically what you have is a lot of guys who have to get ready for these new rules and adjust their game. And some of them dramatically. If you have a slow pitcher, I mean, he has to figure out how to be a faster pitcher. You have all this stuff. You have the teams having to adjust. You have all this stuff. And you have to do it in about a week, in some cases, maybe 2 weeks. And why? Because these players, a lot of these players are going to the WBC where they don't have the rules. There's none of that. I mean, how insane is that? That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy that Major League Baseball did not implement this. And they'll say, well, they don't do this internationally. These other teams aren't used to it. You know, you have players from, for instance, from the Japanese League. They aren't doing this stuff. Like, okay, fine. But it's an MLB production. And so as some of the players have been saying, either you don't do it this year, the year of the WBC, or you put the rules in during the WBC. All right, well, it is what it is, but just keep an eye on that. The rules are going to change everything. So really what I want to do here is I want to get into how the rules have maybe changed player acquisition. And a great guy to talk about that is Brian O'Halloran, the general manager of the Red Sox. So I sat down with Brian, and really we talked about when you went into the offseason, how did you look at players? Did you look at players any differently because you had to say, oh, well, hey, this guy's going to hit it here. There was a shift there, or there wasn't a shift there. Maybe that's a little bit different. Or a pitcher is really, really slow, or maybe he's fast, and so it's made for him. I don't know. An example in Brian O'Halloran's case with the Red Sox, Kenley Jansen, one of the slowest pitchers in Major League Baseball, and he, you know, he has to adjust to this. That clearly didn't impact how they looked at acquiring Kenley Jansen. Conversely, a guy like Masahiro Yoshida, who they got, you know, he might be the benefactor of not having any shifts, which Brian talks a little bit about. But I think it's a pretty interesting conversation. You know, Brian's always good to talk to. And also, what I also want to get to in this podcast after Brian is Ramon Vasquez. Ramon Vasquez is the new bench coach for the Red Sox. Boy, you want to hear about some of the adjustments they have to make. They're going to have to make bench coaches. And coaches and managers are going to have to make to get ready for these new rule changes. Listen to this one. Listen to Ramon Vasquez. It's a good one. All right. So it's a lot to get to, a lot to unpack. We even talk about Brian O'Halloran, GM of the Red Sox, owning a horse. There you go. You're welcome. So once again, subscribe, listen, rate, review the whole thing. We really appreciate everything. We're going to kick it off with Brian O'Halloran. Then we're going to get to Ramon Vasquez, bench coach for the Red Sox. Thanks again. Enjoy.
All right, baseball's been boring in large part because Brian O'Halloran. There you go. There's a lead-in for you, Brian.
All right. Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly accurate, but baseball is not boring. I agree with that.
Oh, okay. All right. So why don't we do this? Give me your best. This is what we do usually at the end, but we'll do it right now. If you had to say why baseball isn't boring. And I'll talk for another 10 seconds so you can think about this. But, you know, we had all kinds of answers. Eduardo Perez gave us, like, this four-minute thing, which I want to transcribe and put in the Hall of Fame. Pedro Grifol actually was on. He had a great one. Jonathan Papelbon said grown men in tight pants. So just give me, like, it doesn't have to be, like, encompass everything, but give me an example why baseball isn't boring.
Yeah, I think the batter-pitcher battle, the confrontation, the one-on-one, it's both a team game and an individual sport where there are individual battles. You can say that about other sports, but it's really, really true in baseball. And I think, like, just watching how those battles evolve, how a pitcher tries to figure out ways to get the hitter out, how the hitter tries a way to in a game of failure to get the best of a pitcher, and then beyond that, how there's an entire organization behind those guys, each of those guys, trying to figure out, you know, leading up to that at bat, how they can succeed or make the others fail, and then how it's going to go forward in the future.
So we've talked about stuff like that in the last few months since we started this podcast, and the at-bat that I always bring up, and when you're talking, all I can think of is this at-bat.
Daniel Nava. Against Verlander?
That was a great one, right? No, this is this one was the World Series. Bryce Harper, was it the World Series? Bryce Harper, a home run Bryce Harper had.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, right? So everything about baseball was on display there. Everything, and you articulated even better than I could. But every pitch, like, is what's he going to throw? Harper's thinking it. The pitcher's thinking it. The scouting report, like, okay, you get to this count. Where do you go here? And all of that, every single moment of that, and everyone, and because it's obviously it's high stakes, it's not just a regular season game, and then it culminates in this unbelievable explosion of awesomeness where, you know, you have the image of the fans in the back. I mean, that was, to me, that was it, right?
Yeah, I mean, and when it's in October, or maybe that was even November, I'm not sure, because the season went late this year, But it's you know, it's heightened. It's an incredible environment, and they had an incredible environment in Philadelphia. I think you know, and as you were talking about, I was thinking about it, with every pitch, the advantage can change. You know, how things go with counts. If a pitcher gets ahead of a guy, it's a totally different at bat than if it's 1-0. When you get into those key moments, the Bryce Harper moments, the David Ortiz moments,
that's
late
another
in games,
one.
You know,
well, that we were just talking to David Ortiz, and we asked him which was a bigger moment, you know, the marathon bomb speech or hitting the grand slam. Because I've always said, Brian, that to me, that was the biggest hit in Red Sox history. And here's my reasoning for it, is that if he doesn't hit a home run, it can't be a triple, double, anything else.
Right.
If he doesn't hit a home run, you guys probably don't go to the World Series.
Right.
I mean, would you agree with that?
Yeah. That was just like, as much as David had conditioned us, all of us, for great moments and like pulling a rabbit out of a hat and figuring things out of all the great moments he had had, clutch moments he had had leading up to that, that was still one of the most shocking things I've ever seen on a baseball field and in life. And yeah, it turned everything around.
So part of that leads it, and I didn't talk to, I don't ask, I actually haven't even asked him about it because I'm afraid to, but it was the preparation, which I know because I've got many people who've been dealt with it, knew that you guys had Joaquin Benoit's changeup. That was a thing. Like now we also know that some hitters use that and some don't, but that also goes like that, another example of this, right?
Yeah, the preparation, right. The, you know, all the work that someone, a scout did, yep, or a coach, to identify that and to not just to identify it, but to get it to the hitter so that it's actionable, usable for him. And like you said, not every guy wants to even know. Some guys just want to go up and see the ball hit the ball. But yeah.
I don't want to, yeah. I don't even want to ask him because it ruins like the mystique.
Yeah,
of it, right?
Yeah, just leave it alone.
Yeah, but I do know. I mean, it doesn't make it up. Anyway, that's not that. Good job. Good job of saying why baseball is the board. You get a T-shirt.
All right.
Nice. But I want to talk to you a little bit about. Today I've talked to a few guys about the rule changes, how it's going to affect. It's really going to be interesting. Ramon Vasquez talking about spring training. And one of the things that I didn't really think about was how the WBC aren't implementing these rules. And all of a sudden you have to have this cram course for guys to like understand it. That's crazy in itself. So we know that from the coach's perspective, we've heard the players sound off on this. But when it comes to player acquisition and team building, it's sort of been a little bit of a guessing game. We can say, well, you prioritize a David Hamilton because he steals bases and be more stolen bases. But talk a little bit about when you go into this offseason, how much research was done, guesswork was done, and how much emphasis there was on the rule changes.
Yeah, so we spent a good deal of time on doing the best we can to figure out, you know, how it's going to affect things, how, you know, which players might be might gain value because of it, which players might lose value, who might lose some hits, who might, you know, be more important because of their range or whatever it might be on defense. Obviously, the pitch clock is a whole different animal with how it's going to affect pitchers that have that are slow or pitchers that work with a good pace.
But we signed
Kenley Jansen. So. Here's the truth. We did a lot of work on that, and our analytics department came up with some conclusions, some projections, some things that they thought might be the case. But the truth is, like, until these things are implemented, you know, you can't figure out every little bit of it, of exactly how it's going to affect one player or another. And we're all playing with the same rules. We got to find a way to make the most of them. And so we mostly just focused on like more the traditional fundamentals of evaluating a player. And obviously, I say traditional now means everything, including
right.
analytics and everything that goes into it. But we focus mostly on, you know, we didn't want to overthink things. We focus mostly on the good players are good players. Fundamentals are still fundamentals. But we did spend some time looking at how it might affect things.
So can you give an example of like you said, you don't know. I mean, we have to preface this like, yeah. We don't know. Give you an example of like how a player you acquired might sort of help. Like, and obviously the thing that jumps to mind is shifts, I guess. Because that's the one thing, people look at spray charts and like, oh, look, he hits it there. And it's going to get, do you have any examples of this?
Yeah, I just think left-handed hitters are going to benefit. Again, with Yoshida as an example, like we're trying to translate a lot of things. You know, he's coming over from Japan, has incredible success over there, and he can spray the ball all over the ballpark. But I think we did have, and it wasn't necessarily because of this, but we did have a desire to add a really good left-handed hitter to the lineup, and certainly someone that can use our ballpark and go the other way. But I would bet that every left-handed hitter, the vast majority of left-handed hitters are going to see some benefit. I think it's to be determined how it's going to affect some of the right-handed hitters. So that was maybe one, you know, not the reason
we
did want to get a left-handed bat.
So, I mean, the one, the hit that I immediately comes to mind, which is the hit up the middle. Like when you and I were growing up, it was like, hit the ball up base the middle, hit. Right? That's what you're taught hit. To do, right? Base hit. And now it's become like an automatic.
I didn't execute that very well myself. I don't know about
you were like a Remy drag butt guy, right?
I actually was a right-handed hitter, but I used to beg my little league coach to let me go up left-handed so I could bunt.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
And that's why I didn't make it.
So close. But, you know, that is the one that jumps to mind. And I know that, you know, listen, I mean, Jackie Bradley has had a tough go of it the last couple of years offensively. But I think that what hasn't helped him, I mean, I saw so many balls taken away. He was a guy who got all the time.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be different. You know, it's for a while, it was all of us, players, people that are in the game, adjusting to the fact that up the middle was not necessarily a hit anymore, and that someone would place a ball somewhere, you think, oh, that's base hit, and then, wait, there's a fielder there. Yeah. Now it's going to be reshifting as we watch the game back to, you know, a different,
We're going to have reality. To have more, and by the way, you can't put the Bradford Show Hall of Famer, Travis Shaw, Mike Moustakas, these guys over at second base anymore. I mean, right, you need athletic second baseman.
You know. I do think that's another conclusion is just, and you referenced it with David Hamilton, and not that, you know, we're making decisions necessarily based off some of the new rules, but we are factoring things in, and just range and athleticism has to come to the forefront and be more important.
Do you think, you mentioned Hamilton, Hamilton's a base stealer, do you think that the running game is also going to come back more?
I think a little bit, that would be my best guess. I don't think it's going to be like drastically different, but I think some of the changes, you know, but that is one of the more unpredictable parts of it, with the disengagement rules for the pitchers and pickoffs and all that. I think it's a little bit TBD, but I wouldn't expect that it's like all of a sudden a different game than it was the last couple of years, but hopefully more balls in play, more speed, use of speed, more defensive athleticism and great plays. So I think it should be a good thing, and better pace.
Well, that's the biggest thing. I mean, we talk about urgency, but also when it's one thing for the rules to come out. So the rules come out, and you know, players are all worked up, and you know, it's whatever. But and then we sort of digest them, and then you get to places like the winter meetings, and you meet if Theo meets with you guys or whatever. As this has sort of evolved, as we get closer, has your eyes been opened more and more about certain things, about the rule changes, than maybe initially?
I would say, you know, they rolled them out. We had advance warning that, you know, maybe this might be coming down the pipeline for a while, and so we had a chance to get used to it. So nothing really recently. It's more, I think the big next step is spring training and getting out there and seeing how these things play out.
Was there any talk about, I mean, about that is a frustration. As I said, that not the WBC not having it. I'd be perfectly honest with you. I kind of assumed that they were.
Yeah. You know, that's one of those things that we can't control, and I do wish that they had it. But the WBC is such a great tournament; it'll be fun anyway. But yeah, it does create a situation with us where we have to, for the guys that we have going over to play WBC, we have to work harder to get them up to speed ahead of time and beyond when they come back.
So the cliche question is, hey, well, did the offseason unfold like you thought it would be? But playing off what we're talking about how teams, you know, listen, the money is the money. The money, I think, was above and beyond what most people thought. But in terms of how teams approach players, was it what you thought or was it different?
You know, it's always unpredictable. Like you, whenever you think you know what the market's going to look like, you tend to be wrong. But that said, look, we're coming out of a couple years of the pandemic, a new labor agreement. Historically, there's been robust spending in situations like that after a new agreement, where at least we know what the rules are, the economic rules of the game are for the next few years. So we expected a robust market. You'd have to be aggressive to get players. You never know exactly how it's going to play out, and so there were some situations that played out, wow, that was way different than I expected, and then others were where it wasn't. So it's always dynamic.
How about the guys, the way they were targeted? Like they talked about this in the last few years, like where it becomes more difficult to get the guys that you want to get, because teams are looking at things the same way.
Yeah.
Did you get that sense even more this year?
Yeah, I think that is more and more the case every year. It's the same thing in the draft. It's the same thing with the Major League free agent market, the trade market. Not that there aren't still differences, and every team is trying to evaluate players the best they can, but there's a lot of overlap. There are a lot of teams going after the same players, and it made for this year, a tough trade market and a free agent market that exploded, at least in some parts of it.
Because I remember talking, for instance, a guy like Brandon Walter, it was this guy. This is going back a couple of years. He was a minor league, out of sort of nowhere guy, and teams were asking about him. And they're probably thinking they're getting over on you guys. Yeah. You're like, no, you're not.
You know what? It happens all the time. And we get excited about what we think is an undervalued prospect of another team. Like how we figured this out, this guy down in the DSL, we got this data on him, or we got this report on him. And we'll maybe sneak him in as a third player in a deal in the last round. They're like, we wouldn't trade him. We love that guy. Yeah. So it's like,
that's weird. That's 10 years ago, that doesn't happen, right?
No. I mean, that part is very different with prospects that are deeper on the list, like not top 30. You're talking maybe somebody's 60th guy or a flyer or a recently signed Dominican DSL player. That part of the game has changed a lot.
Who was going back? You've been with the Red Sox for a while. Going back, can you identify a guy you're like, when you were able to take advantage of that you guys were sort of able to say, you've had some good success stories, but is there anybody that jumps to mind that maybe you, I guess in layman's terms, you would be able to, you weren't be able to get now, but you were able to get back then?
Yes, I have one. Except there's a trade that didn't actually happen, but everybody.
Well, that makes
knows
it even better.
It.
Okay.
Everybody knows about it. It was when we were trying to acquire A-Rod, and we had the Texas deal, and then we had a simultaneous deal to trade for Maglio Ordóñez with the White Sox. And in that deal, we asked for Brandon McCarthy, who was an A-ball right-handed pitcher. And, he was a nobody. He was not well-known. He wasn't on the prospect list. And we are, burgeoning analytics, a very small analytics staff had highlighted him. I think it was just more strikeout-to-walk rate and some good peripherals, simple peripherals. It wasn't, we weren't getting data and pitch data and all that type of stuff. But we asked about McCarthy, and they were like, yeah, sure. It seemed like they weren't even sure what they had. And now, that's not to say, I'm glad that all didn't happen because things worked out the way they were supposed to. So I'm not trumpeting that as something we were so smart, but that's an example.
But that's, it's those that level of guys. I think I read somewhere, maybe you can confirm it, that you guys like Jacob DeGrom, early on, right?
Yeah. Yes, we did. That's,
sorry. You're like sad trombone.
Greatest regrets of all our careers. But
What was that? Oh, you did? When was that? He was single?
It was around 2014, maybe. I could be wrong on that.
But he was low-level minors.
I think he was in A-ball.
But that must, it doesn't make you feel good that you didn't get him, but we were right.
Yeah, we were right. There have been plenty of times we were wrong, but I wish the Mets hadn't figured it out.
But did the Mets know?
They didn't trade him to us, but there were some discussions, they smartly held on to him and didn't work out.
Okay, yeah. But there's a lot of examples like that. It's just sort of interesting the way, I remember, so I was just talking with Eddie Romero about the top international signing Cespedes, and he was saying I said, well, what stands out about him? He's like, how the ball came off his bat, and we had measurables. I'm like, you had measurables? And that is a thing, right? I mean, this, however, teenage kid in the Dominican Republic, you actually have measurables, which, 10, 15 years ago, that probably doesn't happen. Right?
Yeah, totally. It's a very different landscape, and it's going to just keep going. There's going to be more and more data and more players. It's still the case that there's more data, on the upper level minors guys or a college player out in the draft versus certainly a 16-year-old, international player that you're signing. But you can have them at your academy and get data on them as the ball comes off the bat, or the pitch data. So it's different than it was years ago.
Does this lead to less sleep for a general manager for a player?
That's
cute. Yeah, more information.
We don't sleep a lot anyway.
No.
But there's a lot going on. But it's fun. It's exciting.
Yeah.
That's the job.
Yeah. All right, how's the horse doing? You own a horse.
Yes.
You own a horse. You, I don't want to misrepresent this. You do own a horse.
So I owned, it always sounds funny to say, a piece of a horse. People say, what piece of it? Like, is it the hoof or what are we talking
delicious.
About? Like,
No, I'm kidding.
So we, my brother and I and some other family members, you know, I grew up loving horse racing, going to the track with my dad. And
it's the sport of the future. It's coming back.
I hope so. I love it. But I don't know about in Massachusetts. But anyway, my brother convinced me to jump in on getting involved in owning a horse that was run out of New York, Saratoga, and Aqueduct. And just when the horse was starting to go, I think he came in third, and things were going well. He was looking up, and he got claimed. He was running. I don't even know if you know how it works, but it's basically like claimed off waivers.
Taken from you.
Yeah, he got taken from us.
Your analytics showed that he was a good horse, and someone else had the same.
Yeah, so I have our analytics department. I haven't told Haim this, but I have them working, late at night on horse racing. So that's how I identified that horse. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But anyway, that horse got claimed, so we took the money we got from that, put it in another horse, and she didn't seem to have a lot of talent, but then her last race, she ended up out of nowhere winning the race, but then she got hurt and she had to retire, so now we're looking for a new horse.
I was going to ask you for Major League Comp until you that took a turn and said you had to retire.
I can't do
that would be unfair.
That's not a good idea.
I'm every time I talk to you, I'm educated more and more. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks so much to Brian O'Hara and good stuff from him. Now we have another perspective. Bench coach, newly appointed bench coach, Boston Red Sox, Ramon Vasquez.
For me, with the new job, starting to build a relationship with the guys and talking to them and all these new rules, talking about this new stuff coming up, new challenges to everybody. This is going to impact hitters and pitchers. That's something that's really what we're trying to accomplish. Just go see them, talk to them, talk about the new rules and how they're doing, you know, family-wise, and how they're training. We actually want to sell the facilities where they train, which is pretty cool. I never had facilities like that when I was playing. We went to see Kike and his facility where he trains in the offseason, which is amazing. I think looking ahead, like something I really would love to do, maybe see more guys, travel more, go to different places. I guess there's a bunch of different guys working in different facilities in different states. So I think that's something I would love to keep doing.
You had mentioned the rule changes. So for bench coaches, I think this is going to be, we don't know what the rule changes are going to look like, right? For anything. What's your take on it? Like, if you had to, like, power rank, if you had to say, this is a thing that's at the top of my list in terms of, this is going to change and we have to be ahead of it. What are some of those things? Besides, obviously, you have to be quicker for pitchers and.
You know what? I'm going to look into the whole clock thing. I think this is, for certain pitchers, it's going to be an advantage. For certain pitchers, it's going to hurt them, I think. Same for the hitters. Some hitters are going to like it, some hitters are going to have to adjust. But I think it's who's really going to take charge and say, I'm going to be the one with the advantage here.
That's interesting, yeah.
The whole 15-second and 20-second, it could hurt a hitter, it could hurt a pitcher. You know, if you grab the ball and you get on the rubber right away, you see how some hitters want to take their time getting on the box. And now that's not the case. You can't be calling time when you're getting set. All of a sudden, you get on the box and the pitcher comes set. You're ready to pitch, and now you're like, wait a minute, you call time, well, that's the only one you get.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can't wait to see. I mean, I hope they enforce this in spring training, because I really want to see. I really want to see what is this going to be like. I mean, the bases are really not going to, you know, the picks over the first base, it is what it is. You know, like, I think there's very few players where you're picking over 3, 4, 5 times in one at bat. You know, you can count it. What we're going to steal a base is going to steal a base.
Yeah.
So that's
what. Do you think there'll be more stolen bases? I mean, that's sort of like the narrative, right? Is it some?
I think there will be. I think there will be. I think I'm more worried about not the speed guy. Those guys are going to run what. It's more about the sneak guys. The guys, you know, not the red, not the green, but the yellow and the ones in between is the guys that are actually we need to take a look and have a plan. But that aspect of the game, I'm not really that worried about. I'm more worried about the hitters and the pitchers, the time, and the time for signs.
That's true.
The time for signs is going to be crazy. Like, after a pitch, the hitter looks over. How quick can the manager relay a sign to the third base coach?
Yeah.
For the third base coach to relay it,
yeah.
I mean, that usually can take about 10 seconds.
Yeah.
5 seconds for the manager to give signs, another 5 seconds for the third base coach to give signs. That's 10. We don't have that time anymore.
And that's not even including all the preparation, the hitters.
Yeah, so you see the sign, like, okay.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, like, it's I think it's insane. To be honest, I think it's. I think there could have been a little bit more time. We could have started. You know, if this is what we're trying to get.
Yeah.
I think we could have started. I don't know, 25 and 30 seconds.
Well, and here's the other part, and I've talked to plenty of guys about this. Is this is the major leagues, and when you get to this, like, we could say it happened to minors, but this is the seventh inning on the most important times. All this stuff is happening with the game on the line, with a lot at stake. I mean, that's another part of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think there's pitchers that take their time in certain situations to think about this pitch they want to make, and there's no time. You got to grab the ball, and you got 20 seconds to figure it out and deliver it.
Yeah.
You don't have 20 seconds to think about it. Okay, you have about 5 to 8 to get on the rubber, and then you have the rest of the time to make the pitch. But it's there's going to be a lot of mistakes. I hope it doesn't happen. But I, you know, when you know, many times you see a guy make a pitch and go behind the rubber, kind of rub the shoulders, stretch.
Yeah.
I hope injuries. It's not
another one too. Yeah.
I'm worried about that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, how many times you take a swing and you kind of stretch your back, a little tight here and there. And then you go and you keep going to right back. Now it's like, no time. I need to get on the box.
Yeah.
So that's, I guess we'll see.
And we haven't even gotten to shifts, right?
Shifts, I actually went through the shifts in winter ball.
Yeah.
We did the shifts, no shifts in winter ball. And it's kind of like more back to old school baseball.
Better athletes, you rely on the athletes at second base and obviously shortstop. Yeah,
definitely. There's a couple things we can still do.
Yeah, well, that's so. This is what are the things you can do? Like, so, like, I hear crazy stuff, like almost like putting a guy in motion, you know?
Well,
like
I guess you can't put him in motion, and he,
but like, as long as you don't cross the base,
as long as you don't cross the ball is hit,
but.
I'm not looking much into that, but there's just certain situations, certain ballparks.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Oh, with the outfield. Let me guess. Can I guess? Outfield?
There you go.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So,
all right.
So, there's opportunities to do stuff like that. We'll see if we do it or not, if it makes sense at some point. But it wasn't that much of a change with no shifts and winter ball.
Really?
I thought it would be. You know, some balls went through, whatever. Like, you see that line drive in the grass over the second baseman's head. You're like, oh, that used to be an out. and now it's a hit. So a lot of hitters are going to be excited about it.
Yeah.
They're going to be happy. But, you know, I think bottom line, pitchers know.
Yeah.
That's a hit.
Yeah.
You know, they got to make a better pitch. But that's not going to be too much of a concern for me. I'm concerned about the times.
Yeah.
The clocks.
Yeah.
And not so much, you know, like I said.
Are you going to do drills? So you've got to manage spring training, right? You've got to organize spring training.
I'm organizing spring training.
Yeah, so is there drills you can do then? Like, this is, I mean, I don't know if this is a Bush question or not, but you have to get ready because everyone has to get ready.
We have plans.
Yeah.
Right? There's a lot of work to do.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to do. You know, bullpens, it's going to be with the clock.
Yeah.
In the bullpens. You have this amount of time up to you receive the ball. there's going to be cloth throwing in the bullpens. Making sure the guys stick with the times. And same with the hitters when they're taking live BPs. Live BPs, when you do live BPs, there's going to be cloth for the hitters.
So right away, what we'll notice is there'll be a clock in the bullpen to practice. So when even in Fort Myers, on the sort of like you have those four mounds, you'll have clocks on.
Six pack.
And then in live, you say live BPs.
Live BPs, there'll be clocks.
Okay.
Hitters can be talking. You know, I mean, I guess at some point we're gonna just let the guys pitch.
Yeah.
And make sure their deliveries are where they need to be, and there's not gonna be clocks at time.
Yeah.
But there's gonna be lays where, all right, this is the real thing here. In live BP, we're gonna run it with the clocks. Definitely, that's something we're going to do. And games. For me, it's going to be a challenge during the games.
Yeah.
Like, it's just where I need. I don't get to practice giving signs to the coaches, to the catchers, to relay to the pitchers, to use the pitch call. Yeah. You know, it's going to be fast.
Yeah.
It's going to be really fast. I might have 3 seconds.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, catcher catches the ball, throws it back to the pitcher, looks at me. I can't even. So the point is, usually you watch their coach's signs. You watch the runner's behaviors, you know, the coaches, you know, to see, oh, do I want to pick over? Do I want to pitch out?
Yeah.
Do I want to fastball up? Oh, the case is going to run. I feel like he's going to run. Like, I can't do that no more.
Yeah.
Because I got to get my signs quick. I got to think ahead of what I think they're going to do and relay a sign, because I don't have time to watch him and then give signs, because the catcher needs to give the pitch and he needs to get on the rubber.
Yeah.
So this is just, it's like you have to play without signs.
I mean, you do, right? I mean, it's like
you have to pick your spots.
I
have talked to coaches that did it in the minor leagues, and they said, well, you know, it works. You know, we made it work. And they already play baseball.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, but I want to get the feel of it.
Yeah.
I can't just hear it. Like, yeah, it was fine. Like, you know, you're in the minor leagues. You know this kid, he's not going to run. Like, what, you didn't give a sign that one pitch? Like, well, we're in the big leagues here. Like, we need to give signs. We need to play the game. Like, I just don't. I need, like I said, I need to have the feel during the game of what is going to be like. So we'll see. But that's the area where I'm thinking about too much. Like, first and third defense. You know, the catcher comes out forward, gives signs.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess
you can't do that anymore. I mean, you won't be. Well, you won't have time.
Yeah. The catcher is the only one that has the power to go forward and give signs.
Okay.
But then at the same time, when I read the rules, it's only the catcher. Like, what about the team that had the third baseman gives bump signs?
Right.
Can he do it? Or can the catcher go up? Like, he's stopping the game, and then the third baseman gives the signs.
Yeah.
And then we move to the play.
So the catcher is the only one who can call time to stop the clock.
To give signs.
Yeah, okay.
And I guess that put that on the rule, because they've seen that the catcher gives signs all the time with men's on base.
Right. So catcher, this is crazy. So catcher goes out, calls time, because he can call time, stops the clock. And maybe the third.
Not for us. We haven't given signs from third base for a while.
Yeah, but other teams.
But other teams have.
Yeah. How long does it? Is there a stipulation how long that lasts?
They have a certain amount of time to relay to do a sign.
Okay.
And then move back to his position.
And then that's when the clock starts.
The umpire, and then the umpire has.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But obviously, first and second, first and third. But now, how many times are they going to be able to do this? I know there's a rule of how many times. Like, you know, a guy fake breaks from first and third, fake breaks. And I'm like, okay, well, they might know what we're doing. We want to change the sign. So now the catcher goes back out there.
Yeah.
And gives another sign. I mean, is this really going to be something we are going to be able to do? Or we can only do it once per batter?
Yeah.
This is questions I have for MLB. We at Rival Speed Training. So
there's a lot of
stuff. And you know what stinks about it? Well, you're a big WBC guy, so I'm not gonna Not having the guys around, man.
We're going to have quite a few guys, and it's going to suck a little bit because they're going to be there for a couple of weeks. We enforce the rule. We teach them. We talk about it. Then they're going to leave, and they're going to play without the rules.
WBC isn't playing with the rules.
No. And then
that's stupid.
And then when they, well, I guess overseas they don't play. They're not.
Yeah, but I mean, this isn't anyway. This is my own thoughts. It doesn't like, you have to. Yeah,
I agree.
But because it's like this is if you're going to put it in spring training, right?
I agree.
This is the penalty you pay everybody else. These guys still have to get ready for the season. Like, I'll give you an example. Kenley Jansen, right? Slowest pitcher in the majors. He's going to have to get used to this, and he's going to be in the WBC not having to do it. I didn't even know that they didn't have the rules. So big.
We have a few weeks to prepare them. Whether they want to do it and work on it once in a while while they're playing, not necessarily the pitch clock, but the coming set part. You can't do any more than a bunch of foot plants.
Like, yeah.
All those things, hopefully, he fixes that. So at least fixes one thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If some of those guys make it all the way to the finals, they're going to arrive at spring training.
You have a week to go.
Wait, a few days to go,
yeah,
to start the season. Like, that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
To us.
I don't mean to like give you anxiety.
Oh no,
it's excitement. It's exciting.
We already talked about it. We've been talking about this. Yeah. So it's just a tough year to with the new rules, WBC.
Yeah.
I mean, is this really a good idea to do it this year, to change the rules this year? When you look at it, it's a terrible year to do it.
Yeah.
Because of the WBC.
Yeah.
If you're going to play WBC, if you're going to apply the rules in WBC, great.
Right.
But if you're going to incorporate these rules, it should have been done next year. Or maybe it should have been done last year.
Yeah. I just think they should have done the WBC because... But either or, you're right.
Anyway, it's over.
It's over. All right. Let's
move on.
We solved a lot of problems. I just want to say congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. So it's gonna be fun. Like this stuff is fun. It's like
it will be. You know what? I like challenges. It's gonna be challenging. It's already challenging. New job. New stuff on my plate, which I've done before. You know, I run running game. I run spring training before for a little bit. I did it in 2020 when Ron was managed for those few weeks of spring training, and I helped him dealing with the scheduling. So I'm gonna be doing the scheduling, dealing with the base running stuff, helping Alex preparing for games. Like I have managed before for a few years now, so I'm excited for the opportunity. I'm gonna take all the challenges. You know, all this new rules, new challenges. You know.
That's good. It'll be good. We'll reconvene in like 4 months.
Yeah.
Like, it'll be good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.